recognizing the unsung heroes of sports media.
I'm stuck in this pit, working for less than slave wages, working on my day off.
This is the Producers Podcast.
I'm a producer.
Oh, you the executive producer.
With your host, Dimitri Ravenos. And it starts now.
So this is a weird way to start this week's episode, only because this hasn't come up before. Hopefully this will come up again in the future, but if you enjoyed listening to Adam Hawk, the executive producer of the Jim Rome Show on the Producers Podcast last week, there's an opportunity to work with him now. They are expanding the production staff, and the ad is posted at BarrettSportsMedia.com. Just click on the resources section, you'll see jobs, and you'll see the description. You can click straight from our site to apply. So if you liked what you heard last week, there's a chance to work with that guy on the table. This week, we are talking to Thomas Carroll. He's the executive producer of the Bernie Miklas Show on 101 ESPN out in St. Louis. And I was out in St. Louis in May? April? I can't remember which. Spent a little bit of time with Thomas and a little bit more time with Bernie. Two guys that could not be more welcoming to showing you how they do what it is they do. And as I was putting together the list of people who I wanted to talk to in season one, Thomas sprang to mind because of his work history. He is relatively new to working with Bernie and being in St. Louis. He's a New England kid. He worked on the Celtics Network. He worked at ESPN. He worked on the two local stations up in Boston. And also, he spent time screening calls for Paul Feinbaum. I mean, that is a really unique blend of experiences to bring to producing one of the most well-respected local morning shows in the country. So sit back, relax. I'll come back at the end and we'll have our parting thought for you. But enjoy this conversation with Thomas Carroll from 101 ESPN in St. Louis. You came down to St. Louis from... I'm going to say the New England area because I know you were at ESPN. I know you were at the stations in Boston. Before we even get into any of the radio side of anything, how much of a culture shock was it? How much getting used to of the area did the job require?
Man, the Midwest is weird. Everyone is so nice. It's so weird, man. Why is everyone so nice? Yeah, man. I grew up in New England, obviously, and it's just a different vibe up there. You know, people are less friendly. People are very deliberate in what they need to do every day. You know, if they don't need to talk to you, they don't.
Right.
Whereas here, everyone wants to be your best friend at all times. You know, my dad and I, when we moved in, we're at Target and we're checking out stuff at the register, trying to get some new stuff into my apartment, and every single thing the lady brought across the conveyor belt, she had to have something to say about it.
Right.
Had a story about it. Like, oh, you know, I remember my first toaster, and then, oh, you know, I remember my first fruit bowl. Oh yeah, this is a great cereal you're buying. It's just every single thing. I was like, oh my God, right away. I was like, well, this is different.
Is it different preferable or different exhausting?
You know, both are great in their own way. I'll say that because New England, although it's not friendly, that part of New England is also charming, you know?
Yeah.
And people here, you know, them being so nice, obviously you get used to it and it's great to be around people that are in great moods all the time. So, you know what? I'm going to take the middle of the road answer and say both are good in their own special way.
Sure. And as you know, as a producer, there's never a more interesting answer than the middle of the road where you take no position.
Listen, man, I'm not paid to give the hot takes, man, you know?
So you come down to St. Louis to work with Michelle, right? Because you guys have gotten to know each other up in Bristol, and Michelle Smallman, who's Bernie Miklas's partner on the morning show there, tells you about this opening and you come down. Were you kind of, I don't want to say prepared, because it's not like Bernie is an imposing guy, but did you have an understanding of just how ever present in the St. Louis media that guy is, just what a big deal he is to the St. Louis sports fan?
you know, to be candid, I didn't know about his background until Michelle put the show on my radar. But once I knew about it, knew about the opening and had interest in it, I did my research and found out about Bernie's background and, you know, read as much of his old stuff online as I could and read everything that he was writing currently for 101 ESPN and for The Athletic. And I'd listen to the show every day, sort of to prepare myself and familiarize myself with him as a talent. But before coming out here, before I planned on coming out here, no, I didn't really know much about Bernie. And that's very New England of me to just only kind of be in that New England bubble. You know, I would know, I knew New England guys, you know, Boston writers, Boston hosts. I know national guys from, you know, growing up watching ESPN constantly, reading ESPN.com. And, you know, that's sort of the bubble I lived in my whole life. And then when this became an option, I did more research on this market and figured out, oh, wow, yeah, Bernie is an institution here.
Mm-hmm. So then let me ask you this, from day to day, what is it you are telling Bernie, particularly now that he's gone back to being a solo act, that he needs to do and be aware of to make sure his topics and his opinions are hitting in the most effective way? Because I would think with a guy that creates articles, a live radio show, a podcast, and the occasional video, I would think that it would be easy to sort of slip into the thinking of, well, I know I've covered this before.
So one of the great things about working with Bernie is he sort of always knows where he wants to go.
Mm-hmm.
When it goes to hitting with the local teams, Cardinals and Blues, like he comes in every day knowing I want to say this, this, and this about these things.
Right.
So as long as I can make sure that he is given the real estate and the resources on the show to get his opinions out, I feel like I'm doing my job.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to hitting stories that aren't local, that's where I try to get creative about how to work those in, not as maybe full segments, but as notes here and there. You know, we have different benchmarks that we do every day,
right,
where we'll kind of quick hit the big stories of the day. So on maybe an NFL story that is big enough that we'd mention it, but not do a full topic on it, I'll make sure that we have a way to work that into the show one way or another.
Mm-hmm. And are there things, because I know from sitting with Bernie and having a brunch essentially at his office, I know he's a college football fanatic. It's not really St. Louis's thing. So do you guys get creative about how he can talk about this thing that he's so passionate about on the show, but not do such a deep dive that he loses most of his listeners?
So college football is interesting in this market. And granted, I just got here.
Yeah.
So this is, you know, learning from the people that I work with, but people do care about the local teams here on the D1 level, Mizzou and Illinois. So that kind of works as a jumping off point for us with college football. So if there is an SEC story or a Big Ten story, having those teams in this market is sort of our avenue to mm-hmm. diving in deep on that stuff. And, you know, one of the nice things about Mizzou being in the SEC and the SEC being the dominant conference in college football, you know, there is more of an appetite for that than you would think.
Yeah.
So, you know, Bernie being this college football savant and this college football junkie, it actually plays great for us because that's a whole other tool in his arsenal that, you know, some guys in a market that don't necessarily have that D1 football team in the market,
mm-hmm.
You know, don't have, where Bernie can, you know, go to the utility belt and use that. So it's pretty nice.
Speaking of college football and the SEC, I'm going to use this to segue into something else pretty important, especially when you're a solo producer on a show. You were a call screener for Paul Feinbaum for a little while.
I was, yes. I screened calls for Paul for an entire off season, which is fascinating. Like doing the call screening for Paul, I'm sure during the season is like the Super Bowl every single day.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, who's going to be the quarterback for Alabama every single day?
Sure, but
the
like
season was my job.
The,
you know, it was the same question every single day. Who's going to be the quarterback for Alabama? Who's going to be the quarterback for Alabama? Every day, hundreds of calls. And it was just like, I don't know what to tell you guys. I'll put you on hold with this question, but Paul has answered this a million times.
Right.
It's like full line constantly on just who's going to be the quarterback for Alabama.
Yeah.
And so off-season Feinbaum is a very, very interesting animal because that audience is just rabid for college football no matter what time of year it is. So it was really, really funny.
The season might be the state and the fans' Super Bowl, but the offseason is the caller's Super Bowl for sure when it comes to Feinbaum. So let me ask you this. From screening calls for a show like that, that is almost entirely built on calls, and I guess now that there's the TV side, Twitter as well, what did you learn that you take into a job like this about how to involve the audience, but also keep the conversation moving along?
So one of the interesting things about that show, and actually Boston sports radio too, is very caller driven.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having worked at both the stations up there, you know, I've dealt with callers quite a bit. And the thing I've learned from callers is 99% of them are really bad.
Right.
But the 1% that's really good can be great for a show. So it's a challenge, but you should do this challenge if you're working on a show every day,
mm-hmm.
is put the call out to the listeners to send you in, you know, the listener voicemail. Like we have this thing called mic
right.
drops that we do, or, you know, put the call out there for text messages and see what you get. Put the call out for tweets. And a lot of it's going to be junk and you just need to accept that. But the stuff that's good makes it worth it because it's just a completely outside the box thought of someone that's not involved in your situation or in that bubble with you in that room that can send you in a completely different direction or be a completely out of the box opinion that you might not have thought of.
Well,
or it could be hilarious, you know, if they send in something that's terrible and you can
yeah.
just have fun with that too. So there's all sorts of different ways you can go, but you need to know that you're going to have to sift through some BS to get to the really good stuff. Honestly, it's kind of a fun challenge sometimes because you're just sort of listening and screening the things and you're going, nope, that's bad. Nope, it's bad. Ha, that's funny. Nope, but it's kind of
yeah.
bad. And you just go and then you're like, oh, this is good. And you know, you make sure that's ready to go and you move from there. So that's the thing that I've learned from dealing with calls on both those levels. It's been interesting.
Aside from the fact that going through what you guys do, the mic drops where people open the 101 app, record what they're going to say and send it into you. Aside from the fact that listening to that is a little bit more time consuming than picking up the phone and going, what's your name? What do you want to talk about?
Mm-hmm.
It does sort of cut right to, all right, who are the 100s and who are the zeros a lot easier.
Yeah, no doubt. It you listen to it and it's pretty black and white of if it's going to be good or not.
Right.
Whereas a caller, you can screen a caller, make sure that you tell them, hey, don't swear, keep your phone off speakerphone, make sure you're not on Bluetooth. You don't need to ask how we're doing when you get on the air.
Right.
And make sure you get right to your point. And you know they told you it's a great point. You can put them on hold, ready to go, screened, good to go. As soon as your host can call them in, you know, oh, Steve, you're on with the Bernie Nicholas Show. He could be on speakerphone with his radio all the way up in the background.
Mm-hmm.
He could be eating Doritos with his window down in his car and not say anything that he just said to you on the phone and
right.
maybe drop an F-bomb. Like, you have no control at all. And it's terrible. It's honestly one of the worst parts of dealing with callers because they're just total strangers that they're not radio professionals. They have no idea what they're doing. And you can't even really get mad at them for that, unless it's like a regular caller that should know.
Yeah.
And really only Feinbaum should have that sort of expectation for his callers. because he has so many regulars. But it's one of those things where you know what you're getting into when you're doing a caller segment. So yeah. If a host gets mad about that, that's a place where a producer after the segment can remind him, hey, well, you know, yeah, you're upset about it, but look, we knew what we were getting into when we decided we're going to do a caller segment.
Here. Right. Right. You used to, so your production career has been, I think varied would be the best word for it, because you've done live radio, you've done podcast production. I think if I remember correctly, when we met, you told me that you were the producer for the Celtics Network for a little bit, right?
Yeah. The job I had before this job here in St. Louis was as the producer of the Boston Celtics Radio Network for 98.5 The Sports Hub. So yeah. I've worked quite a bit in both talk shows and play-by-play before getting here and doing talk show full-time.
All right, so I'm going to ask you about the podcast thing separately, because I think that's an interesting conversation as well. How much of what you learn from producing a show is relevant when you are producing a Celtics game, or if you're going to be a part of the Blues broadcast later on the season, I don't know, but how much of what you learn from producing talk shows can you take into live play-by-play production?
So that's a good question, because, you know, when you're within the game, a lot of it is obviously you want to make sure that your play-by-play guy and your color commentator are conveying what's going on the court or on the field as clearly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sort of that in between, that lull between action, and this is crucial in football broadcasts, where you want to make sure that you're prepping guys to have the ability to have talk show type conversations.
Right.
Because that's where a play-by-play broadcast, I think, can truly separate between being good and being great, when you're getting as clear a picture as possible on what's happening in the game, but you're also getting some personality out of your, you know, announcers in the booth, and you're feeling that chemistry between them.
Mm-hmm.
And you're also, you know, getting a window into like, oh wow, this guy's super knowledgeable about not only what's going on the broadcast, but also the league as a whole. Or, you know, I working with Sean Grandy on Celtics broadcasts, he loved to throw in nuggets about all the other local teams because, you know, everyone in Boston is obsessed with all four teams.
Right.
So he loved throwing in nuggets, you know, in a blowout about, I remember we were doing a game when the whole Josh McDaniels Colts thing mm-hmm. broke. And I think, I don't remember if that Celtics game was a close one or not, but Sean brought it up like seven different times on the broadcast.
Yeah.
and it was so funny. And he works so well with Max that he knows how to get him going on stuff. So he'll mm-hmm. know what types of stories to bring up here and there to kind of get Cedric going. So it's finding that balance, and having the talk show background definitely has helped me in that aspect on play-by-play broadcast. And it's not something where, you know, in a pregame, I'll say, okay, these are the 10 things I think you should bring up and talk about
right.
when there's slow parts of the game. But it's more of finding that balance of how, you know, to casually talk about stuff before the game to kind of get your guys going on certain things. And then based off that conversation, they'll want to bring that up on the broadcast, you know, if that
yeah.
makes sense.
Yeah.
And then there's other times where, you know, if it's specific to that league. So if, you know, I worked on a bunch of Patriots broadcasts because, you know, there would be times where the producer of the Patriots radio network would have a conflict because he also produced Bruins games. So I'd be up there mm-hmm. working with the Pats radio network. And, you know, that broadcast is crazy long. So, you know, you're throwing out topics about the whole NFL on a Slack channel with everyone involved in that broadcast. So there's just always constantly stuff to talk
yeah.
about. with both the studio guys and the play-by-play guys.
Interesting. All right, we are running a little bit out of time. Maybe we should circle back and do a whole podcasting episode with various producers at some point, because I do want to get to, with you, the two questions I ask everybody to close out the show. The first one is, what do you want to do next? Where do you want your career to go from here?
Oh, man, that's a really interesting question. I'm going to give you kind of a cop-out. I really like what I'm doing now.
The theme of this episode.
I want to keep doing what I'm doing now and get really good at it. I mean, I feel like I've been here for not that long, and yeah. I'm sort of just finding my footing. And, you know, you don't create – really natural chemistry overnight with a host, and I feel like Bernie and I have had good chemistry from the get-go. Mm-hmm. But I think it's getting even better and better, and I want to continue to grow that and continue to grow this show and just have it be as good as it possibly can be. I mean, this city is such a good sports market. You know, the Blues just won the Cup Finals, and you know, the Cardinals are in first place as we record this today. And, you know, these fans love these teams. So if I can be a part of shaping that conversation every morning for this market, I think that's a win in a place I'd want to be for a while.
And last but not least, what do you wish hosts and your bosses on the programming side knew or understood better about your role?
That sleep is important? No, I don't know. start the morning show an hour later? No, it's I have a really good open line of communication with my bosses, and I know that sounds like the biggest brown nose answer ever. But
I've met your bosses and spent significant time with them. I can believe that.
Yeah, it's sort of a situation where we're all sort of in this thing together, so we all kind of know the daily challenges. I feel like that's another cop out for you, but I just, I don't know. I don't really know what to say, because everything I could say, they'd be like, yeah, all right. Yeah, I know that's a challenge. Yeah, we've talked about that already. So,
well, what about your partner? What do you wish Bernie understood better?
Man, I feel like I'm just trying to like stay out of trouble here, but Bernie has worked in this industry for such a long time that every single thing that I've ever come to him with as a problem, or if he has a problem with something I did, or if I think we should have did something differently, like, we just talk it out, or he already knows it's coming. He'll be like, I know that this is, you know, hard for you in this way, but blah, 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 blah. Like that.
Right.
We have those conversations all the time, and it's great. I mean, him and I have a really, really good line of communication with that type of stuff. So, you know, I feel like I am ducking your question here, but I'm just, you know, giving you the skinny on what we do here every day. I don't know. That's kind of the key to a good station, is just having that open line of communication and, you know, just being honest with your hosts and your programmers. So that's what we do here.
The Midwestern nice has rubbed off on you, because I feel like talking to New England Thomas, you'd be throwing haymakers left and right.
I know, it's unbelievable. I'm getting soft out here in St. Louis.
You heard Thomas and I in that episode talk about the mic drops that they do on 101 ESPN in St. Louis, and that's kind of, I guess, my door into what I want to talk about for the parting thought here today. I know we've talked a lot about listener inclusion and phone calls and what the best way to handle that is going forward for sports radio. You know, a lot of people now are gravitating towards texts and tweets, and I had a great conversation with my friend Rod Larkin, who is the APD of 98.7 Arizona Sports and the PD of ESPN 620 out in Phoenix. Hello, Rod. Thanks for listening. And he talked a little bit about how, as he tries to figure out how to incorporate that kind of interaction into his shows, it's just hard to make it sound natural. And that was really, when he told me that, it was the first time it ever sort of dawned on me that we are at this weird crossroads in sports radio where we are trying to entertain more. And sometimes what that means is that you have to be aware listeners and phone calls especially can derail that. And I agree with Rod. It is hard to sort of make written communication sound natural as you introduce it as an argument to you or as a supporting point to you. You know, just any way you introduce written communication in a spoken medium, it's never going to sound quite right. So I like what 101 ESPN did, and I would hope other producers and stations start to figure out the best way to do this. What a mic drop is people just download the 101 ESPN app. They record their thoughts. They have, I think, a 15 to 20 second limit, something like that, and then send it into the station. And it's up to the producer to pick out, all right, here is what is hot, and here is what just doesn't even register me passing it on to the host here. I think it is a more natural, more contained, and more advantageous way to bring listener interaction onto the air. I'm not saying it is what every station in America should do, but it is a model for what every station in America should do. What is the creative way that you can introduce listener interaction to your show without turning the controls over to the listeners? Because that's kind of what you do when you take a live phone call, right? Like, unless you are 100% okay with being the show that just slams the button and slams down and hangs up on guys midpoint because you have, you know, a whatever, 20-second or two-sentence cap on callers, fine. I think that the natural inclination of a lot of hosts, especially young guys, is to let people get their point out. I think if we can come up with a creative way of letting people make those points without giving them control of the airwaves, the whole format and the whole business is going to benefit. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. Be sure and download new episodes of the Under the Radar podcast, which comes out every Monday. And by the time this goes up, I think we will be less than a week away from 5 new episodes. Yeah, it's next week, actually. 5 new episodes of the Barrett Sports Media Podcast hosted by Jason coming out. So keep an eye out for that as well. We'll talk to you next week.
You don't want to believe it, but maybe the show is over.
Thank you for listening to the Producers Podcast. To connect with Dimitri, follow him on Twitter at Dimitri Ravenos. And for the latest sports media news, visit our website, BarrettSportsMedia.com.